Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
So we're out here in the beautiful Sanctuary Forest with Michelle Palazzo. She's taking a group of people on a medicinal and edible plant walk, and there's got to be about 20 people here.
Yeah, I believe there's 20 or 25 people here.
Yeah.
It's a good group.
Could you describe this location to people who may not be familiar with where the Sanctuary Forest is located?
Well, we're in Whitethorn, which if you are in Garberville, we're about 20 miles southwest of Garberville, out heading toward the Lost Coast. And we're on the Mattole River in the beautiful forest here.
Michelle, what is your background around plants? What got you interested in edibles and medicinal plants in the first place?
Well, in the first place, it was probably making, you know, daisy chains and dandelion potions when I was a kid in New York. But after that, I went to college in Massachusetts, studied environmental science and forestry. And I did a lot of botany in college and really fell in love with the northeastern plants. And started getting very interested in the edible and medicinal qualities, but never really had the time to focus on the edible and medicinal qualities of plants when I lived there, finishing up my degree. Eventually, I traveled across the country and wound up in Portland, Oregon, and then I wound up studying for 5 years with a wonderful herbalist, Cascade Anderson Geller, in Portland, and then many other herbalists from all over the country and the world, and just really fell in love with the fact that plants are so useful in many ways, and food and medicine are, you know, some of the ways that they're so incredibly important in our lives.
I know one of the things that you talked about too about making tea is just even the act of brewing it and taking the time to drink it is medicinal.
It is. I really feel that in this day and age of, you know, being fast-paced, everyone's busy. I mean, I live in the middle of the forest, and I'm still busy. I have a homestead to run. I have a five-year-old daughter. I'm the head teacher at a school. I have an herbal business. I have, you know, teach at conferences. And so I think it's really important to keep in mind that you need to take those times to really sit down, relax, focus, and just calm yourself down after a long day. And the art of making tea is one of those things that really is relaxing and healthy for you because of the tea blend itself, but also just the act of it is, you know, you calming down, sitting down, reflecting on your day, and taking some deep breaths.
You've been talking on the hike a little bit about some of the things that you use some of these foraged foods for. I'd like to know a little bit about your wild weed pesto recipe.
We'll taste that later in the hike. My wild weed pesto recipe, it varies. You know, it depends on what plants really want to be in it that day. Sometimes when the nettles are in season, which they're pretty much past season now, I always put nettles in my wild weed pesto, but that's before they flower. You know, after they flower, you don't want to use them internally anymore. Things like chickweed, plantain when it's young, sheep sorrel, clover leaves, miner's lettuce, dandelion leaves. So it really just, it depends. I'll mix it up a little bit. And sometimes I'll throw in some herbs from the garden too, like chives or something like that. But I never put basil in my wild weed pesto because usually it's a pesto that I make that's not in the summer. You know, because summer I have plenty of basil, I have plenty of cilantro, and I can make those kind of pestos then. But in the springtime and in the wintertime, there's no basil available. And so I make wild weed pestos, and they're very nutritious and they're very delicious.
Some of the things that you've also made that I thought was interesting, because I never thought of huckleberries as anything other than for the berry, but you use the leaves sometimes in teas.
Yeah, huckleberry leaves are wonderful in tea. Like I said, they are really good at regulating your blood sugar levels, and they're also very strengthening for the vascular system. And they taste really nice in tea. You know, a lot of the green leaves that you put in teas, they have a green flavor, but I actually enjoy that. And if you couple it with things like rose hips and things that have a bit more of a fruity flavor or a flowery flavor, then you can really make nice blends with it.
One of the things I think that is important is recognizing the plant and making sure that you get the right plant, because as you've said, not all berries are edible. Mm-hmm. What sorts of resources do you recommend for people who are interested in learning more about edible and medicinal plants?
Well, there's definitely a plethora of books out there that are important to look through. But I really encourage people to not just use one book. You want to use a variety of books. You want to cross-reference. You want to make sure that when you're trying to identify if you have a book that you can actually key out plants, which, you know, like a good field guide will have a key in the back where you can go through, okay, you know, it has this kind of leaves, this kind of berries. And also taking, you know, classes with people or going on walks with people. I'm sure there's online resources that I don't really utilize as much, but I'm sure they're out there. I feel it's important to have a wide variety of resources, not just one.
One of the things you talked about too is sometimes, like you talked about what I call stinky mint, because to me, the smell is not a good mint smell. But to somebody who might have migraines, it actually smells good to them. And that plants can actually call to a person that if you have a problem with something, that you might find the smell or the taste very attractive.
Well, it's true. I've had that experience many times with taking people on plant walks, where I will present a plant like what you call stinky mint or hedge nettle, Stachys rigida, and you show the people, okay, what this plant is good for. And sometimes I won't even say, oh, smell this plant, what do you think? And a lot of people will say, oh, wow, that's really stinky, I don't like the smell. And then I've had numerous people say, wow, I really like that smell. It really calls to me, it's attractive to me. And I said, well, do you get migraine headaches? And they say, I do. And so I've always found that very interesting, that many times that what you need in a plant really is something that you gravitate towards. And, you know, plants have that knowledge within them, and it's a matter of you sitting with the plant and getting that knowledge from them.
Another thing that you talked about was that plants that are wildly grown may be more nutritious for you. Talk about why that might be.
I really feel like if you're growing things in your garden, and I know I do, when I'm growing my tomatoes and peppers and broccoli and things like that, I amend the soil a lot. I put chicken manure and compost and a lot of different things in the soil to really give the plants the nutrients that they may need to get big and to produce big tomatoes and big broccoli heads. In the forest, there's obviously nutrients in the soil, but the plants are having to rely on their own devices. And so many times, especially if they're growing in an environment that, you know, is strained, they really are potent. They really hold their medicine within them a lot more potently than, say, a broccoli head or even, a strawberry in your garden might.
Something you've talked about that we need to be aware of too is not over harvesting things from the forest, leaving things, we can experience it, we can sample it, but leaving things for the wildlife, that really depends on these sorts of things. More of a grazing attitude about tasting things that are available in the woods. What sorts of things do you recommend to people who are going out in the woods and trying to forage for plants?
I think it's really important to keep in mind that humans have a huge impact on this planet. And so when it comes to harvesting plants, certainly they're available there for you, but you need to really respect the plants and you need to look at the plant colonies and make sure that the colony can sustain harvest. And even if it is a large colony of plants, you may only want to harvest two or three plants out of it. You want to be able to make sure that the plant colony stays intact, stays healthy, not only for its own self as a plant community, but for the animal communities that live in the forest and are foraging for their own food. We have the luxury to be able to go to a supermarket or to go to a farmer's market or to grow our own foods where other animals are not able to do that. So I feel that it's really important for us to remember to share and to not be part of the habitat destruction that unfortunately will make plants threatened and endangered.
Now, I feel extremely lucky to have been able to go on this walk with you. Do you do this a couple times a year or very often here at Sanctuary Forest?
Well, usually I do this edible and medicinal plant walk once a year for Sanctuary Forest. And then I also do other plant walks that I just lead by myself. And I'll do it either here on the land along the Matole, or sometimes I'll go out into the King Range and lead plant walks there. I also just taught at the Women's Herbal Symposium in Laytonville, and I led some plant walks there. And then I also teach a summer adventure camp for children, and I lead plant walks for them as well.
Nice. How could people get a hold of you or find out about these sorts of opportunities?
My email address is mamapalazzo@yahoo.com, so mamapalazzo@yahoo.com. People are welcome to email me to find out information about hikes and things like that. I also, when I teach classes and lead hikes, I also will make flyers and post them in certain places and put them in the newspapers and on the radio and things like that as well.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much, Michelle.
No, you're very welcome. It's been wonderful having you on this hike.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.